It is Thursday night, Friday morning, which means if you're on Studio A, you are here. You've made it to Ground Control with Keith AZ and Major Tom. Major Tom and Keith AZ, it is good to be here, as always, after 2 weeks off from Revolution Radio through the holidays. We have done much, I'm sure, with ourselves, and we are back. We've shaven and brushed our hair. Happy to be back, nonetheless. I am pleased to be with you wherever you are on 101.3 in Central Kentucky, or if you're just surfing the waves on the internet and you happen to stumble upon Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, we welcome you. I suppose we will get into introductions and talk about the show, but first I want to say to everyone that I couldn't be happier to be a part of this family and have you listening to us. It's a good thing because we here on the station are 100% listener supported and always have been for the past 6-7 years, roughly. Yeah. And it's been that way because it works and it always has worked. You support what you believe in, and time again, that is proven true. So here we are, in 2016, still alive, still kicking, and still being on the forefront of bringing you news through the alternative media forums. And I couldn't do this, as always, without my producer and co-host, Keith AZ, who has been along through the ride. He joined on, and this has just been an awesome, awesome ride ever since. So I'm happy to be here. Keith, how are you doing, sir?
Well, we got Vinny Eastwood on with us tonight, so that meant I had to get sick.
Like always.
I swear to God, it's so annoying. I got a flu or something that it's just kicking my butt, and I've got all kinds of stuff to do. We had some plumbers come in today who didn't know what they were doing. They were supposed to install a new washing machine that my brother bought for my mom, and the guys walked away, leaving the hot water disconnected, which I, of course, promptly corrected. But that's just crazy. I mean, I don't know, stupid people. What are you going
to
do?
Keith, I don't know what to tell you. New Zealanders are just full of disease. You know, just thinking about us gets you sick.
Ah, even from all the way over there.
Yeah, it's a, it's a pandemic.
Ah, well, now you tell me. Anyway, with that being said, let's welcome Suzanne to the call as well. Suzanne, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Did you have fun holidays and family and all the good stuff?
Oh, yeah. All the Merry Mythmas and all of that. We all got together. We ate some ham, some turkey, you know.
Too much.
Because that's what Jesus would have done.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what Jesus would have eaten, is ham and stuffing, two forms of potato, candy canes. Yeah.
And Jesus would have definitely, definitely shopped at Walmart for his Christmas presents for his kids.
Or he would have taken that voucher that he got from his employer to go to get the Safeway ham.
Yes.
See, and it just goes to show you, there is a safe way to eat ham.
Well, yeah, but that's usually kosher, and then we get into that anti-Semitism, so we don't want to go there.
We don't want to get co-unsure about it.
Exactly.
Am I taking over the show? I'm sorry, guys.
No, we have taken over the show. We're just here to have fun. You know, there's really no agenda, or it's not about Mitch or Tom and I. We wanted to talk to you and see how things are going. You know, one thing I was thinking of is, how do you guys see the new year? What about yourself, Vinny?
Well, when I went up to have Christmas holidays with my family, I don't see my family that much, and I remembered why I don't see them that much. Oh shit! And sorry about the cussing.
That particular word's fine. There's some others we try not to use.
Really? We can say shit. That's fantastic. But yeah, realization hit me. What I was going through with my family, how they didn't want to listen, how they kept changing the subject every time I brought something up, how they were avoiding any kind of serious, meaningful, or valuable interaction with each other just to talk about superfluous nonsense and, you know, little things that are basically of no importance whatsoever. I nearly blew a rage gasket, bro, to be honest, and it angered me so much that it made me realize what my listeners have to go through every day. They can't just, you know, go to their families on the holidays once a year and then leave after a week of like terrible frustration. For a lot of listeners, being with your family, having them not understand you, not want to listen to you, and not care about anything that you care about, it's painful. It's a trauma in and of itself, and it makes you feel depressed. It makes you feel alone. It makes you feel isolated because you figure that the people who matter most to you are family, and then you suddenly realize that, or you start to maybe believe that your family doesn't think that you matter, or they certainly don't think that what you think matters.
I'm going to introduce Steve in a second now, but this is how bad it is for me, Vinny. My father thinks Obama will be remembered as one of the greatest presidents ever. Dude.
Hey, you know, technically, incorrect. If the job of the president is to run the country into the ground for the benefit of the global elite, then technically he is the greatest president ever.
I'm afraid so. Anyway, Steve, we normally don't take calls this early in the show, but I saw you there, so I thought I'd bring you in. We got Suzanne Posel and Vinny Eastwood with us.
Hi. Well, I'll be seeing Suzanne on Monday, so my impulse to call.
Am I the only one who can't hear him?
Your mic feed is a little low.
Yeah, Mike, we can't even hear you at all. Can you turn up your gain or something there?
Or scream into the mic, heavy metal styles, that mic.
Hello, how's that?
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, now you got mad feedback.
Way too low. Okay, sorry about that.
Speakers too high. Microphone too low.
Yeah.
Oh, in fact, me and Suzanne Posel were talking about this before the show. If her microphone was down and I can't hear her, does it matter that my speakers are down so low that I can't hear her? You know, like, do they cancel each other out? Does it become a double negative? I don't know. I thought it was funny. Maybe it wasn't. Anyway, Steve, welcome.
Well, hello. I had an inspired thought from something you said previously. And I was about to get into that as the reason why I called in and kicked it around the barn with your opinions, because I think we'd love it. But because of the tape delay, 1 minute later, it's like, whoa, what is this heavy shit about depression at the dinner table? So I don't know which way you want to go now.
Sorry,
bro. No worries. I think we've all experienced this. Suzanne, I'm wondering if you have. It seems like family members are the hardest people to try to communicate some of the information that we want to share with people. Because
I disagree with that, Keith. I think family members are just as hard as the average person to communicate these ideas to. But when they reject you, it hurts a hell of a lot more because your family means a lot to you. And when you get the feeling that they don't care or that they don't get it, it hurts a lot more because you care more.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I care about my brother real deeply, and he just doesn't get it at all. It was like pulling teeth to get him to understand that the Fed is a private consortium. It's not a part of the federal government.
You see, I don't push it. There's just so much about me that it's open about that I get a lot of natural feedback from my personal expression, and effectively the one thing that tears my heart apart, it literally tears it to shreds, is when they insist that I am crazy in some way, shape, or form and it makes them so angry that they do not like me anymore. And it's not that I care that they like me or not. It's that it's coming from such visceral hatred for how confused they are about me. That's the problem. Nobody likes the fact that I confuse them. It makes them extraordinarily angry about things that do not matter to them. Because I don't want to explain chemtrails to people that don't give two shits. But I want them to know that I have an opinion. Because I'd like to change their minds, but they haven't made the invitation yet. Nobody said, Steve, teach me what you think you know. And then I would tell them, yes, and remember that I only think that I know it, but I've been doing a lot of research. I'm sure there are flaws in everything I'm about to say.
Has anybody ever heard those words come out of a family member's mouth? Please, teach me what you know. Nobody!
Yeah, but it would be for something like playing guitar chords or something. Nothing real important.
Please teach me everything you know about cross stitch.
Yeah, it's just, it's insulting. But the worst part is that you're the only one who's being insulted, who's recognized as, you're the only one that recognizes your own insult, you know, coming at you. So to the point where you say, you are insulting me. And they cannot fathom the concept of the insult that is upon me for calling me crazy about something I have never described to them. Intentionally did not describe to them because their initial reaction was from defense of their own beliefs and therefore not worth my time or their time, to be honest. I'd rather work
with them. Oh my God,
Steve!
I said
in some place of respect and trust.
You've just like said a bunch of words and things that me and my sister just had a conversation about this morning, and I said something along the lines of, "If I don't assume what you know, and you don't assume what I know, and we don't put any labels on each other, and we simply respect and listen to each other, I think we'll actually begin to understand one another a lot better." Right. And we had a great conversation, and it was about something meaningful. It was about something important, you know. And
yes.
I think maybe our families, they do care about us and they love us, but they're not willing to listen to us because they don't believe us and or they think we're crazy. Okay, it's like, I love you, but you're freaking right. Crazy. So...
My ability to change the hearts and minds of my family is not something I've strategemed yet. And so, therefore, I keep a lot of things to myself. Because you say the right thing in the wrong order.
Oh, yeah.
Or the thing that you haven't verified before you are forced to say it. You could freak up your entire stratagem for bringing these people to be frank, Ayn Rand's objectivism. I don't care what you think about Atlas Shrugged and her personal morals. Objectivism, aside from the intent of trying to disprove God, is probably doing more to prove God as a useful tool for what we're trying to do. Because everybody is a subjectivist.
Seems like a cosmic irony. Therefore, it's probably true. You notice how most things that are true are really ironic, you know, like, for example, the government says it's there to help you and take care of you, but it's actually there to subjugate, enslave and eventually kill you. You know, well, that sounds like a cosmic irony. Probably true then. Now, this thing about family.
What do you think in court, the response for disagreement is I object. You don't want to be the subject of discussion.
Wasn't that a Will Smith movie? I object as opposed to I robot. I'm sorry. I cracked myself up.
Row,
oh my God. So anyway, I got one thing to just quickly read out here because it's about convincing your family. Anybody wants to read the full thing, it'll take you 25 minutes to read but or listen to the video. But conspiracy theorists, why people think you're crazy and how to change it. This is a little portion of it called The Seventh Man. Statistically, it takes about 7 different people to tell you something contrary to your belief system before you'll consider abandoning it. Now, this is not the same person repeating it to you 7 times. It's a bell curve, of course, so some might only need to be told by one person, and others might need to be told 100,000 different people over the course of a lifetime. But if you're a person and you walk up to someone and you say, "Hey! Did you know the world is run by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery?" The likelihood is that person will just call you a conspiracy theorist or some other insult and then ridicule and or ignore you. However, if you're the 7th person, you just happen to be the 7th person to walk up to them and say, "Hey, did you know the world is run by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery?" There's actually a much greater likelihood that the person will say something like, "You know, a lot of people have been saying that lately," and they might start asking you questions about it instead of denying it outright or being abusive. But unless you're pretty clued up and calm, you know, because we get excited ultimately because we don't get to have real conversations with people in person, you know, sometimes, trying to convince them of any particular element of conspiracy without the oodles of documents and graphics that convinced you just lying around, you know, or in your back pocket,
not your attempt, 6 to 8 months of research that you did that was sure. Exactly like that and time consuming.
Sure. So if you try, it's just going to backfire, especially when you start ripping into reptilians, chemtrails, and the flat earth. You know, like people are all individuals. It's really hard and difficult to tell by assumption alone which conspiracy elements they're prepared to accept. And the best approach, I think, is just to not even try to convince them at all. You know, you're not trying to convince or sell somebody something. You weren't woken up, you know, in inverted commas, by a conversation you had on the streets with a complete stranger for 5 minutes, did you? No. It's because you spent frickin' countless hours researching, reading, watching documentaries, listening to alternative talk radio, and nobody put a frickin' gun to your head and made you do it, did they? And you probably wouldn't have done it if they had. So, you know, can we stop trying to do this to people? Can we stop trying to wake people up? Why don't you just say one thing and then move on, you know? A little information grenade. Pull out the pin, chuck it in, and hope it blows up in their face.
You know, that is pretty much the attitude I have, is the information's out there, and it's going to get reflected back, just as you said, Vinny. You know, people are going to get that from other people, and hopefully from voices that they're more inclined to respect, you know, to really hear it from.
Well, think about what you're doing to people, though, bro, because when you wake up, you get really badly traumatized, don't you? Because you realize your whole life is a lie, okay? Everything you've ever been taught, everything you think you know is BS. It's like doing 20 years of study all the way through elementary and high school and going to college and getting your doctorate and all of that kind of stuff. And then just some guy walks up to you and says, "Hey, bro, none of that shit matters." You know, you're not going to be happy about it. And so this is what you're actually wanting to do to people. You're wanting to traumatize them. You're wanting them to feel pain and just so that they wake up ultimately, because you can't wake up without suffering, I don't think.
Yeah, there's repercussions involved when you realize it's a lie. I was fortunate to have some experiences in my youth which showed me that the government's lying to us. So, all this time, I think it may have been a little easier for that reason. But I don't want to go any further without Suzanne and Vinny, you both getting out your websites for our listeners. Suzanne, do you want to go first? OccupyCorporatism.com, I believe.
Yes, OccupyCorporatism.com. It's a headline news website. I post articles 7 days a week, 2 or 3 articles a day. I also have a radio show, Hardline. I post that show directly to my website, and I'm so grateful that it's very popular. So if you're interested in listening, just go to Occupy Corporatism, and up at the top you can listen to the show archives, or we have this nice little player down at the bottom. You can listen to the last 5 episodes.
Excellent. And I did take a look at that site. I do. There's a couple of stories on there I want to touch on at some point. But I want to go back to my original question with you, Suzanne. Where do you see 2016 going? Do you have a feel for it? I mean, what are your thoughts just kind of in a general way about the upcoming year?
I think that the question of whether or not our country was actually founded on Christian values is going to be a huge thing. I think that the ideas of the Republican Party splitting into two between conservatives and Tea Partiers is a huge thing. The agendas of both sides should be examined and looked at. The people who are running for president on both sides obviously should be heavily examined and looked at, but we should also pay very close attention to what they say. When Marco Rubio was speaking to Christian Broadcasting Network, he said that if a law in this country causes Christians to sin, then they have to choose God over this country. That is a man running for president. When Ted Cruz makes comments about how we need to restore this country to Christian values, that we need to get rid of the Supreme Court justices and replace them all with conservative Christians so that they vote biblical values, we have a problem. When the governor of Kentucky, who happens to be a Tea Party patriot and an evangelical, writes an executive order that absolves Kim Davis of her bigotry by allowing all of the county clerks to remove their signatures from court documents that are filed and legalized in that state, which lend to their credibility, when he comes to his people who voted him in and says that he's going to, through executive order, turn Kentucky back to conservative Christian values. I think we have the Christian form of Sharia, and I really think we need to stop and pay attention to this. Because the freedoms that were afforded to us in our Constitution are threatened by the overwhelming control structure that is religion. And you just go back in history and take a look and you'll see the devastation that this Bronze Age mythology has had on every civilization, and not just Western cultures, but also in the Middle East with Islam, and in the Asian nations with Buddhism.
So I have an objection. Here, may I object to that statement? I'd like to respond when you're done.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay, well, I wasn't trying to interrupt you. I swear to God, please.
No, I welcome it. Bring it on. Let's go.
For one thing. Although I am objecting, I am not saying that that the facts aren't inaccurate. But what I do see is another divisive element, because there is true blue, good intentioned human beings that are not the psychopaths that are part of the unawakened that we were just talking about our frustration about, which we have to remember. This is about love, because guess what? Revolution Radio's run out of effing Kentucky. This is close as it gets to Nighthawk, and to everybody who benefits from this station in every way, shape, or form. There is no Christianized Sharia law coming to Kentucky. What they are doing is the same thing that they are doing to the Bundys, which is trying to flip the script to go to war against against fundamentalist Christians who are extraordinarily peaceful people. You know, they are starting to turn that kind of variety of white bread in America, if you will, into a persecuted minority, much like the Shia Muslims of the Middle East. Because guess what? There are only three countries in the world that have any form of actual Shia population: Iran, is the only one that's a solid Shia country. Also doesn't have a Rothschild bank. Two, the all the other nations are predominantly Sunni with Rothschild banks because they're all in on OPEC, and that's all Western banking money. But you've also got Iraq is a blend, Syria is a blend, and there are Shias running certain departments of their country in the official Iraqi government. So Iraq is extraordinarily complicated, and Iraq is trying to help the West defeat Assad underhandedly from the Sunni influence in Iraq. If people haven't freaking figured that out yet, then World War III will be upon us. But we all know it's a scam, even if we don't know that precise detail, which is why we've lasted as long as we have. And I hope that has reached the right ears in Washington right now who may be listening. I'm talking to you, Rand Paul, you son of a bitch.
Can I offer some insight onto this? I support religion for one reason. Vietnam POW statistics. The ones who were like really, really religious and they were locked away in a cell completely alone with no hope of rescue had a far higher survivor rate than those who believed in no higher power because the people who just had a belief and something outside themselves weren't ever truly alone and always had some kind of form of hope to replenish themselves, and their bodies didn't shut down as a result of having that illogical hope, right? And that's why I support religion on the one hand, but what I don't support is blind following, right? Anything. Follow this blindly. Here's a book. Obey it to the letter. If anybody ever obeyed any religious text by the letter, mate, it would be hell on earth.
You know what, Vinny, we had a guest on a couple of months back named the Greek, and it's his contention that the best way to cure people of religion is to read the Bible. And same with the Quran of Islamism was his contention. I don't know how true that is, well, but it's an interesting
thought. I had that conversation with him myself, and he said that there is not a single person in the world today, and he can guarantee and prove this, he claims, who is actually following exactly what the Bible says. There's not a single Christian on the entire planet who follows everything that the Bible commands that they do, right? Now, this is, for my mind, means that there's a split. There are those who are actually trying, you know, who have good intentions, and those who are simply too stupid or too crazy to know the difference between being religious and being crazy. Okay? you've seen these people all over YouTube. They're pulling up on the sides of the road, people who look Middle Eastern, and they're like shoving Jesus will burn you in hell and all of this kind of stuff down their throats, right? People who watch too much TV, have not enough intelligence, have never read more so much as a snack bar wrapper their entire effing life. And they're telling everybody how to live their life. Right? Now, there's an old saying, it is far more beneficial to notice one bad thing in yourself than to notice 1,000 bad things in somebody else.
Well, I tell proselytizers that knock on my door, and I tell them, I believe in God, but I don't believe in religion. And then if they're particularly annoying, I tell them that I believe in UFOs and reincarnation. Leave me alone.
I remember the witnesses came to my door once and they're like, hey, did you know that science is getting closer to religion? And I go, yeah, well, that's really interesting. Have a look at this presentation I filmed, a Lloyd Pye, the Star Child alien hybrid skull that they found and verified that it's not freaking human, bro. It's really interesting, eh? That'll really fuck with your day. Oh, I apologize for the words, yes, but yes, it will mess with your day.
Well, honestly, there's a lot of controversy when it comes into being a Christian, and what you said, no one truly does 100% of what's in the Bible. That is true. You know, you don't have to go to church to be a good person, or you don't have to go to to the mosque or whatever to be worshiping Muslim. I honestly don't know. But the point is, there's like I got slammed recently by a religious person just for saying Merry Christmas. I'm completely beyond wanting to try and understand their mental state of love and compassion when they can't even manifest
what you're describing here is what I've seen as a split between quote unquote real Christians who are actually very generous, very kind people, actually have read the Bible, but they're not dicks, right? And hypocrites who know nothing about anything and are not interested. The only thing that they want to do is push like a really, really hardcore crackhead their shit on you. That kind of religious fervor I do not appreciate. And I feel that those people in particular should be and can be shunned by all the quote-unquote real Christians, you know? You don't just, like, lend them your hand and lend them, like, oh, well, as long as they're Christian, they're okay. No. Just because someone says they're Christian, two things. It doesn't mean that they are Christian. It doesn't mean that they act Christian, okay? Saying you are something doesn't mean you are something. Having action in your life and a track record for actually caring and being a part of your community, I think is actually a hell of a lot more valuable than any idiot saying, I believe in Jesus, therefore I'm going to be saved, and therefore I don't actually have to physically help my own fellow man in this life, because I don't want to contribute anything, all right? I just want to take and take and take without the effort that it takes to earn what I'm taking. That kind of mentality sickens me to the core, and we know for a fact, all of us do, that these people are everywhere. They're all over the television. They're in your face, in the streets. It's like a plague.
You know, gullibility was such a huge deal today because I don't know if you get it out in New Zealand, but here in America, and I think everybody here, except for Vinny's from America, they had the president do his little gun control forum with all these people in the room and Anderson Cooper as their stool pigeon.
Oh, damn.
Oh, yeah. And they literally just, CNN literally just, they discussed the gun control, like the martial law conspiracy. And basically he parroted the, you know, Alex Jones's declarations of, oh, you think that we're going to actually come through and take all them, because the question was asked by somebody in the crowd who was just like, how do you plan on getting rid of the 30 some odd billion something like these? He gave the absolute specific number to the record that is known of the bare minimum amount of guns that are registered through the sales index that are present on United States soil. And he went and he freaking, like, said, oh, you know, is it fair to say that that's a conspiracy? Da 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 da. Yeah, you know, going off the supposition that because it is a conspiracy, it is therefore of no credibility. And Anderson Cooper, after the interview, played the gullible dupe who said, like, oh, you know, I don't think there's nothing like that going on. I'm just like,
Steve, Steve, like, everything you're saying there is making Suzanne Posel go bursting like, I need to talk about the Council for National Policy. I need to. Oh, my God. Because it ties into everything, bro. Like, Suzanne, don't.
Counsel me up. I want to hear it.
I do, but I want to kind of preface this by saying it was funny because Suzanne's actually become a cliche. Actually, we were listening to a show, me and my wife were listening to a show the other day, and I go, wait for it, here comes the Council on National Policy reference, and then boom, there it comes. And I understand exactly why it is. I remember this interview I was having with Janice Bichello, and she keeps talking about Satanism and keep reiterating it. It's because the Council on National Policy is very real. People don't even, like, know that it even exists. especially the Christian right, don't know that this council exists. And you mentioned Rand Paul before, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
Guess who's on the Council for National Policy? Uh-huh. Right? This is a Christian right-wing think tank that wants to take over America and put, you know, Christian law to replace the Constitution. Right? Now, how successful is that going to be in a country where not a single person actually follows the Christian law? But, Suzanne, I digress. Please.
Here's the thing, though, is that... You know, so what is going on? Because that it can't clearly be, okay, he sits in this group, so he's associated with this nefarious organization.
Oh, no, it's not just him. It's not just him. Hell of a lot of big names, big leaders. Yeah. And that
how
kind
many
of
other presidential? How many other presidential candidates?
Suzanne?
Yes, I wasn't sure if you guys were done.
I was waiting for it to come in, but Vinny had to explain it, so please.
Right now, for the Council for National Policy, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul.
Interesting.
So you can see Mike that Huckabee wide sphere of influence.
Mike Huckabee is associated, but he's not directly involved. He's directly involved with the League of the South, which is the second largest white supremacist group in the country.
I could see him putting on the red dragon robes. That's funny as hell.
Yeah. Well, Suzanne, what you
like a big giant cherry?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Plain as base. The base is the stem.
It's actually quite important because Suzanne is like is doing for the CNP what Daniel Estulin did for the Bilderberg Group. Right, this is an incredibly powerful, influential roundtable. I'd actually kind of put it up there with the Council on Foreign Relations and maybe the Trilateral Commission. Not as powerful as those two main ones, which are more or less a prerequisite to get into the presidential cabinet, but right up there, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And they've been their first attempt to get a president into office was Barry Goldwater in 1964, and they failed miserably. So people who were with the Barry Goldwater campaign decided to coalesce, and in 1981, a couple of months after Reagan took office, they set up the Council for National Policy. Eric Prince, the guy who Blackwater Academy, his mother, put up some of the money to set up the organization. It was headed by Timothy LaHaye, who wrote the Left Behind series. The big names in right-wing media are all members, and it's not just alternative, but Mike Levin, Mark Levin is a member, as well as the head of Newsmax, as well as Breitbart was a member. He passed away, but several people who work in Breitbart News now are members of it as well. Mm. And there's a huge list. I've got a huge list on my website, OccupyCorporatism.com. If you're interested, just put Council for National Policy. I've written several articles about it. Mitt Romney is a member, and he held a meet and greet and go ahead and donate to five of the candidates that are standing up now. It's just very interesting to me.
Even Jerome Corsi's on it. Like
Jerome Corsi is a member, and you asked him the question. And here, folks, here's what I'm talking about. Vinny Eastwood had Jerome Corsi on, and Vinny brought up the Council for National Policy. And Jerome Corsi had a perfect opportunity to explain the organization, to explain its validity, but he chose to say the same thing that a gentleman who Alex Jones interviewed about a decade ago about the Bohemian Grove. When Alex Jones asked this gentleman in the street about the Bohemian Grove, the gentleman said, hey, it's okay if we get together and hang out. You know, nothing nefarious is going on. Who cares if we all hang out together? Jerome Corsi used that same argument. Hey, it's okay if Christian conservatives get together. It's not like we're planning anything. You know, we're just sitting around talking. It's the same excuse that you hear when people excuse away the Bilderberg Group. And that response to me is extremely interesting. Why is he hiding?
Suzanne,
what is he hiding?
Well, you also touched on the exact thing that high-level Freemasons say when you ask them what they talk about in the organizations, right? It's the thing. Secrecy, as JFK said, is repugnant in a free and open society. Now, I believe that to be a self-evident truth. If people are constantly keeping secrets, if there is no transparency, then that society isn't free and open, is it?
No, it's not. And the unfortunateness is the main operandus that they're using is religion. And so a fanatical version of it. It's no different than what the Ba'athists were doing right after World War One. It's in the Middle East. It's absolutely no different than that. You know, the Ottoman Empire was alive and well until World War One. And
you might actually have to define the Ba'athists, because many people would think they're just unclean.
No, the Ba'athist movement started in actually in Paris. A gentleman who was at the Sorbonne, who was a Syrian, realized that the way in which Hitler was doing things was a really cool idea. And Hitler's rise actually started at the end of World War One. His coalescing and organization of the Nazi Party began that early. And so the Syrian in Paris decided to start an organization that would restore the Middle East to its former glory, kind of like how Putin feels about Warsaw lands who have been liberated since the USSR collapsed. But he feels like he has to return Russia to her former glory. So he's now trying to invade those countries and get them back. The Ba'athist movement saw the attack of Turkey after World War One and the decimation of the Ottoman Empire as an affront to their Islamic way of life. And so by utilizing the works of Hitler, actually Mein Kampf was translated into Arabic and freely passed around. And there's a lot of Nazism at that time period that the Ba'athist movement used to push nationalism, to push religious ideology. They incorporated the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. He became a huge figure. He actually had audience with Hitler directly. He was involved in securing the troops in the Middle East. The idea was to create an Islamic state. And so what they wanted to do was unite all of the Islamic countries into one gigantic state where they would have, obviously, the Grand Mufti as their head religious leader, and they would all live under a strict adherence to the Quran. And so Western countries obviously couldn't allow this to happen. So while the British were dealing with the expulsion of Jews and setting up what became the apartheid state in Israel and Palestine, the Muslims saw this as an opportunity. The Ba'athists specifically saw this as an opportunity to push Nazi ideology. The Grand Mufti became a pusher of this, and to such an extent that he, like I said, got audience with Hitler, and the Nazis were working directly with the Ba'athist movement to organize and to make sure that they succeeded in their nationalism, because it was mirroring the Nazi nationalism that was going on at the time. Now, the Grand Mufti was during the Nuremberg trials, after everybody was brought to justice, so to speak, the Grand Mufti was allowed not to have to go through the trial and given exaltation in Egypt, where he continued to do what he was doing before, to rise up for the Islamic State, this idea that we have to have a coalescing of all the Islamic nations and create such a powerful force that the Western countries would not be able to penetrate it. And they would be able to go back to their way of life, because after World War One, here's a little tidbit. The UK, well, what became the UK, and France broke up what we see today. they created Syria. France owned Syria, and the UK created Iraq and several other states. And so the carving up of these nations that we see today is a direct result of what happened in after World War One. And the reason why they did that is because they didn't want a caliphate. They didn't want an Islamic state. So to break them up and then to turn them into separate governments, to monitor them directly and to make sure that there was no coalescing under any religious ideology, to them was an affront, but to the Western nations, that was their way of making sure that what ended up being the Ba'athist movement didn't happen, and it didn't work out very well.
See, I like the idea of living in a secular nation because it means if I commit some kind of crime, I don't get burned at the stake for being a heretic. I mean, just quite simple right there, you know, the, what was it Lewis Black said? He says, you know, a lot of people misunderstand the separation of church and state. Well, let me explain it to you. It means they're separate! It's just like, you know, is there a reason for this? I think that there is, because it's an us versus them mentality. All right, you're not Christian. I have people say that to me, message me and stuff like that. You're not Christian, therefore such and such and blah blah blah, assuming something about my character, about who I am as a person, about what I do for a living and how I contribute to society is determined 100% by that label. You are not me. You're not one of us, right? As if I'm on the outside, as if I'm being persecuted. Now, who is it that's now complaining, possibly rightfully so, more than anyone else about persecution, right? Now, maybe that's a bit too broad of a statement because there's a lot of people being persecuted for a lot of reasons on the earth right now, and a lot of them are screaming about it. But Christian persecution, all right? Now, what I've noticed is a lot of jokes, right? This is how people do it. And you can see it in through the media the whole time, Christians being made fun of and ideologies being trashed and things like that. Is there a good reason to do that? If you're talking about the hypocrites, I think so.
I wouldn't disagree with you on that at all. I'm one of those people. I think that if you have an ideology and it originated in the Bronze Era and it hasn't progressed since then, that it is up for criticism. Absolutely. This is 2015. We understand things on such an awesome level. We understand molecular things. We understand beyond that to string theory. So to continue to use Bronze Age mythology as the answer to anything is highly ignorant.
Yeah, you can't question God because God's infallible. And I go, bro, you say that God wrote the Bible. Now, what kind of ink did he use? No? You don't know the answer to that question? Did God assemble the Bible? You know, did he invent, you know, how to make spines on books and stuff like that? Did he just, like, slot it into the some shelf in the Library of Alexandria? These guys are going to love this. No, I don't think so. Religion was created by man. And if you believe the religion, God created man in their image. Now, that sounds more like the belief structure of an arrogant man rather than a divine being, you know?
And more people have been killed in the name of one God or another than from any other, you know, more wars, more death.
No. I dispute that, Keith. Government.
What do you think?
Government has actually done that. All right. However, there's the qualifier in there that up until recently, most governments were religious.
Well, I would say that they're always religious. How many atheists have we elected to the presidency?
Well,
they've all been Christian.
We've gone off track here because I think people don't realize that statism is also a religion, right? Now, religion itself, what does it mean? What is it? It's a set of belief structures that you can never question. Okay? For example, I'm a statist, therefore I believe the government is infallible. I'm Christian, therefore I believe God is infallible. I'm Muslim, therefore the Prophet Muhammad is infallible. All right? So what it is, it's a comforting blanket in a confusing world that is difficult to understand for stupid people to wrap themselves in so that they can feel better about the fact that they don't know what's going on, but I believe it's going to be good. Did I just insult everybody that has any spiritual belief right there? I hope so.
Well, I think if somebody really, I mean, I do believe in God. I don't believe in religion. I don't, you know, feel that that serves it. To me, it seems like an institution of control.
Okay, does it have a hierarchy? Is there a central figure at the top that tells everybody what's going to, you know, what's what? And they can't be, you know, overruled by everybody, like everybody just goes, you know, votes on it. Nah, Pope, bro, you're out of your mind, man. I mean, greed is a deadly sin. I mean, dude, I need another barbecue bacon double cheeseburger, and I don't think I should go to hell for wanting it.
I do want to mention we'll take calls in the second hour. Somebody tried to call in. Call back in the second hour if you want to join us.
Will we be flooded by angry, zealotous calls, I wonder?
You know, I don't think our audience is of that nature. It's a pretty evolved listenership we have here.
All right. It's not I was going to defame another network just then. That's not a good move.
It's fine with me.
But the thing is, anybody on any of those networks might hear the broadcast and like and just go, ugh. Look, there are a lot of radio networks who are about three main subjects: God, guns, and government. Right? And they don't deviate from that. They don't talk about the really, really weird stuff that makes you question your own existence, right? That's the important stuff, okay? If you listen to somebody talking and they're saying something that, A, you haven't heard before, and B, leaves you feeling like you've just been smacked in the face, like part of you just got knocked off because the information was that compelling, it was that shocking, it was that new to you, that you actually change your life because you listen to it. If you're not having those kind of experiences, stop listening to that radio network that is placating you and stopping you from your own evolution. If they give you too little choices and too few new ideas, they are not worth your time. Personally, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, time seems to be about the most important commodity there is.
In fact, I had an argument, not an argument, a discussion with my sister and my wife today about what I should be doing instead of doing these long videos and long radio shows and everything like that. And maybe I should do really short videos and a video blog and all that kind of thing. I'll get more hits. I'll get more subscribers. And then I go, okay, first of all, which of you has gotten 5 million YouTube hits thus far? Neither of you? Okay. Which of you has got 23,000 and 9/11 subscribers right now? Neither of you? Okay, now let's have a look at my most popular uploads. Okay, in the hundreds of 100,000 views, blah, 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 blah. And you get all the way down to the 22nd most viewed video that I have before it's under half an hour. All right? And I said, look, here's the thing. You guys are trying to go out after the mainstream audience, okay? The reason why you want your videos to be short and snappy is because most people have an attention span very comparable to that of a grape, all right? They can't concentrate for a long period of time. They just can't absorb information, right? Now, we come into break, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be back. Sorry.
We'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned.
The so-and-so kebabiter, thommel, thuper, whatever goes in the... Anyways, welcome back. This is Studio A, of course, and I am Major Tom sitting in with Keith AZ. I am sitting in the background to free up air, but I am still here. And as always, we have Mr. Vinny Eastwood, Miss Susan Posel, and Steve Travesty with us. And if you are just tuning in, this is hour two on Studio A, which means we will start taking calls, if that is correct. Keith, right?
Yes, we've got a couple people wanting to join us already. I do want to allow a little time for Vinny and Susan to remind us of their websites. And I also wanted to mention I've picked up a new show. I'm Sunday nights I'll be hosting a roundtable. If anybody wants to tune in for that, we've been doing it for a couple weeks now, and it's been a lot of fun. So anyway, there you go. Vinny, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
I got a mouthful of food. Suzanne, you do it first.
All right. I am Suzanne Posel, chief editor of OccupyCorporatism.com, headline news website, 7 days a week. I also have my own radio show that is hosted on my website, Hardline with Suzanne Posel, obviously, and new episodes Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That's about it.
I love it. when you own the organization, you can call yourself the chief editor. You know, you can give yourself any title you want. I'm Vinny Eastwood. I'm the Grand Mufti of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and you can see me on YouTube as well. I'm always getting out into protests, and, you know, basically, I'm the most hardcore, hilarious protester you will ever see. Just give me a voice amplification device, and I will make jokes that will make you laugh, all right? It's a very simple combination, but it is an explosive mixture. Kind of like that... that liquid explosive that they had on Die Hard with a Vengeance, but worse.
All right, and we have been joined by a caller. SJ, welcome to the call. What is your question for our guests?
Well, hello, gang. I'm delighted to be able to join you this evening. I'm a Universal Life Church reverend, and the reason I became one was because I could create my own spiritual belief system. And one of the things I've learned on Revolution Radio with this group of people, my community here, is that belief has no limits and everyone's is different. So that sort of is a contrast to Vinny's perceptions earlier about belief structures. So I'd be delighted to talk about that if you'd like, or I could just contribute it and wander off into the ozone. What would you like?
Wow, I think you shut everybody up.
I know. Well, you know, I have my own form of humor, stand-up, and what I do is I talk to people and tell them things, and then I count how many seconds of pregnant silence follows.
Well, I, of course, had my mute on, so I would like to direct questions toward our guests. It's we're very fortunate to have them joining us tonight, as opposed to going into a discussion about beliefs and religion. We have been joined by a new...
They're real hot topics, but
that's okay with me.
They do bear looking upon. Now, see, I'd never heard of a religion where you can pick your own beliefs. Right, so
Universal Life Church.
Okay. Now, is that the only religion where you can pick your own belief? And if you can just pick your own beliefs, isn't that just called being alive and being an adult?
Yeah, it's also called being a Universal Life Church member, or in my case, I'm a Universal Life Church reverend, because I wanted to be able to marry or bury people.
Okay, so is it a requirement to have a belief, have your own set of beliefs, that you be a part of this church?
You're talking about formally publishing them? Is that what you're thinking?
Do you actually publish your beliefs? Like, you draw them up and you go, like, here's my top 10 beliefs. These are my 10 commandments. Thou shalt not wear tube socks with flip-flops. thou shalt not eat KFC after midnight. Thou shalt not buy anything from a Walmart bargain bin. You know, is it that simple? You get to just totally pick them, or are they sort of like guidelines?
Well, I have a pretty unusual set of beliefs personally. And
do they
I
have a number?
That everyone has their own particular ones specifically. But
don't you find it inherently illogical to set your beliefs? But to set your beliefs, can they change after that? Yeah, you can evolve from it, or is it just like
the same?
I'm 20 years old. I set my belief structure, and I'm never going to learn anything different from that. Is that what we're talking about, or is it, you know, everything can evolve and you can just revise your beliefs? Is it like a New Year's thing? Like, my New Year's resolution is to not believe in Satan.
You want to hear something funny, Vinny? I'm actually a member, and I don't even know the answers to those questions.
Now, why would you be part of a religion that doesn't provide any answers?
Send me up for it back during the Vietnam War in an effort to, help me not be drafted. Fortunately, the war ended by the time I was old enough, but
dodge that bullet.
The extent of my knowledge of it, except that I am a member. I have the certificate and had it for all these years.
Yep. So I can't speak for everybody else's beliefs, but I can certainly accept them. I can listen to what they have to say about their concept of God. I certainly have my own, but that's specifically my own personal belief structure. What I have done in my own personal life is explore everything I could and take the positive aspects of everything, and I've tried to retain them and distribute them, and it's a way of approaching the negativity of culture with a positive set of ideas, you know, options.
Can you create
opportunities for people instead of restricting them, right?
How can you create...
Those who self-serve and those who serve others. The two basic dimensions of humanity, the yin and yang of culture.
I believe in cosmic irony. So I'm an incredibly selfish narcissist with a penchant for self-sacrifice for others.
Right, you are. I've noticed that over the years. We've talked many times in the past, but I'm sure you don't remember. It was just a brief call-in or two, but we have had interesting talks. Not recently. I don't think we've talked for the last 4 years. But I remember when you first got involved with and were talking to people on Revolution Radio, and I thought, wow, he's at least willing to talk to the rest of us, you know, directly. And I thought that was the best thing about you. Over.
Now, we have been joined by a new caller, 808 Free and Awake. Oh, also, I should give out the call-in number. It's, I forget this, 347-688-2902, and it's right on the homepage on freedomslips.com, and we will take calls. So 808, go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys, or gang, Susan. I'd like to direct my question to Susan.
It's Susan.
Who is this Susan woman, and why does she keep impersonating me?
It's a constant thing.
For you
and like our network owner always calls her Susan on purpose. It's funny.
I was waiting on you to close the gap on your comparison with Christians and Baptists. I mean, I don't see the comparison. You were talking about Nazis and how destructive.
Well, basically, I saw the connection really straightforward. It's two religious ideologies becoming political and trying to take over a country and institute their own belief structure as a political move rather than a spiritual one. Is that about right, Suzanne? Exact same thing happening today as it did back then.
It's nationalism. It's that, you know,
what's wrong with nationalism? What's the beef against nationalism?
Well, to be honest, nationalism.
Wait, Susan, wait. Why attack Christians with impunity, but we can't talk about anybody else? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, no, that's a straw man argument. No one said
that
the Christians can't talk about things.
No anti-Semitic comments at the beginning of the show. So that's off the table. but it's open season on Christian. But that has nothing to do with
your question. See, you're diverting the conversation to make talking points, which you feel are valid, and that's fine. But let's get back to the actual conversation. You asked me a question, and I'm wondering if you would like me to answer.
I sure would.
Nationalism in itself as an ideology, sure, okay, fine, but so is the Communist Manifesto as an ideology. The application of it is a completely different thing. Nationalism over the course of history has proven with the marriage of religion to be extremely effective in creating situations that cause a lot of harm and a lot of damage. And so nationalism mixed with any religious ideology is something, essentially, our founding fathers spoke against it. In fact, our first president, George Washington, warned about having God in our government. Yep. So did, it's written in the Treaty of Tripoli. You know, we are not a Christian nation. The people who founded this country understood that part of the problem was the Vatican and what became the UK. So if you have religion and government working together, that is a huge problem. But if you take religion out of the government and you allow people to have freedoms based on their right to be here, regardless of what they think or feel, then you have the ability to create a community of people who stand together for rights of all people. That was the intention of our government. We have moved away from that for nationalism, for the ideology that just because you won the sperm lottery and you ended up being born in America as opposed to anywhere else in the nation, that you should somehow be proud of that. You should be proud of your accomplishments. You should be proud of your contributions to your community and how you deal with those that you claim to love, but and your compassion, your ability to be compassionate for people and empathetic. But the idea that you should be proud of something that is essentially, like I said, the sperm lottery, is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I don't agree with you on that, Susan. By the way,
what is it you don't agree with?
Wait a minute. Danny, you're throwing me off track. Let me get my thoughts together here. Why do you always... you seem to confine your religious critique to just Christians, and everybody else is okay. Everybody else is loving and
That's complete fallacious. She was talking about Muslims before, bro.
Absolutely.
No, not in a negative way.
She was talking about it all negative.
I was explaining how the Ba'athist movement is using their
Nazi
religion in order to... That
the Ba'athists were a religion, and they happened to be tying in with the
Nazis. Okay, I'm going to take control here. 808, you're interrupting too much, my friend. This is a guest-oriented show, not a roundtable. Anyway, sorry about that. I think it is a passionate discussion.
Something I would like to compliment Susan on her website and her actions and her writing. I actually went to her website and read everything there. And I was quite impressed. So, Susan, thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Suzanne's actually, I'm not sure if I should say this on air, but she's actually one of the only journalists I can really trust, right? My wife was telling me the other day, like, we were, like, looking at different articles and different people, and then I'd tell her about the stuff that I know behind the scenes about certain people and what they do, and she's like, man, I just don't know who to trust anymore. Suzanne is actually the only person who I've never had to question whether or not I can trust her. And that's because I don't have to. She provides the evidence for everything she says in her articles. Everything she says. None of it's like, there's an old saying, and I think I just made the meme today. It's a quote by Daniel Patrick Moynihan. And he says, "You're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts."
Right.
And Suzanne has this uncanny ability to separate opinion from fact. Much like another journalist who I respect very much, Ian Wishart, here in New Zealand, who I consider to be the top of the totem pole in terms of alternative journalism in this country. Prolific author, you know.
I believe I can express common ground, if I may.
Yes, please
common
do.
Ground. I think that there's a common ground here of we the people are very, very, very worried about betrayal. We're extraordinarily worried about betrayal. I believe that's at the core of what everybody on this call has been saying. And I think that, like, for instance, I had a large piece of concern, which is why I had that objection earlier on about the whole Sharia Kentucky thing. The reason I did that is because it's not that that isn't a fact in writing, Susan. It is a fact, as in it is official government stuff, official, you know, whatever organization it came from. It's official data. It's all absolutely official. It's all credible. But I'm just saying that you're forgetting that what it says is also the public misdirection, because unless you're getting something that was an illegal acquisition, that its official status was that of anything less than public, then it falls under scrutiny and the interpretation of what is going on is in question. Because I think that they want to turn fundamentalist Christians into looking like ISIS because of the eventual turnaround. And then what they're going to do is they're going to start blaming foreign terrorist attacks on Americans that aren't in government, but Americans that are people like, you know, people on the same social cultural levels like Nighthawk. That's why I brought it up before. So that's my big deal, because we can be dividing each other by saying that what the government's plan is working in taking over whole groups of people that we care about. And that almost turns it into a switch off of, I can't care about them anymore, they've allied with the dark side. No, they were duped by the dark side, but they haven't raised the fist in anger yet. Let's go save the day. That's the common ground.
You know, one of the problems we got here is the fact that we talk about we, but we really don't have we yet, but we're getting closer. Back in the 70s, we started doing stats on it. We figured 8% of the people knew basically what we all share, what we know. We've explored every issue in the 20th century, and now we're starting with the 21st century. But that we is emerging. And I'll tell you, I think actually everybody having their heads down on the cell phones isn't that bad a thing. I think eventually we will do flash voting. We'll do flash coverage of incidents we're interested in. And I'd love to hear Vinny talk about what he encountered, and also Susan and her opinions on what's happening in Oregon. Now, I'm an Oregon State lobbyist myself, and I joined, I started doing that back in the late 70s. So I've been watching all this. So I'd like to know what Vinny thought about the people and who was really remarkable. The sheriff just recently came out with some really good opinions talking about the government's excessive behavior in this particular episode. Over.
I think I was just looking up a statistic here, and it says it was a big YouGov survey. 4% of Americans believe they're below average intelligence. Right? Now,
oh, baby. Oh, we could have fun with that the rest of the night, but that's we're getting out of conversation into comedy. I mean, I think
it's just reality. It's just reality. And this is the thing. I felt that reality is comedy, right? Comedy is based on reality.
True. Oh, you know?
Because the best jokes, I think, are those that are capable of telling a complex truth in a very simple, smack-in-the-face kind of way. And it takes somebody.
Well, you know, they get your point when they laugh, right?
Well, it's recognition, you know?
Oh.
Maybe that's.
Yeah, that's the ring of truth.
It's certainly a delight to have you both on Revolution Radio as guests. So thank you very much for that.
Which reminds me, I'm talking over Suzanne. Lots.
Oh, yeah, let's hear Suzanne. She's our white feather guest this evening, of course.
Now, we wanted to talk about Oregon. She knows a lot about it. I know bugger all. I only know about Pete Santilli. That's it. So let's listen to Suzanne.
Sure.
Okay. Yes, I've been following what's going on in Oregon since it began. And here's my take on it. And I go into detail on tomorrow's episode of Hardline about this, because it's a multifaceted problem. We have elements, obviously, with Ammon and Pete Santilli there and some other people, Blaine Cooper, who were there at the Bundy Ranch. And the standoff with the BLM did not turn out maybe the way that they wanted it to. It ended peacefully. Clive and Bundy still hasn't paid his taxes, and no one was arrested for pointing guns at federal agents.
It's what winning looks like, folks. Can we take a win? I said this the last time the government left the Bundys.
Suzanne, have you heard the interview with the sheriff yet?
Yes, the sheriff was out at the property today. No, I'm sorry, not at the property. Ammon Bundy met with him in a mutual area. They did discuss, you know, how long they're going to stay and what they're planning on doing.
They also discussed the fundamental aspect of the law that is influencing this whole episode.
Well,
doing what to whom, right? Who do you think eventually will benefit from control of that those mineral deposits and property? Over.
Well, that's a multifaceted question.
Oh, I know, isn't it a dandy? It's really complicated, isn't it?
The land, the history of that land goes back to the 1890s, right, with cattle barons and Peter French, who was the biggest one in the United States at the time, actually. Yep. And so when he died, when he was killed by a homesteader, the land went basically to just about anyone, and it was overworked, and the resources were depleted. And right, it wasn't until 1934 that the ranchers were going bankrupt. They weren't able to feed their cattle. The cattle were dying. That the government offered to build to purchase the land from them, which they paid a hefty fee for. They paid them generously, and then offered them leasing rights to graze under the assumption that this land would not be overgrazed, excuse me, not be overrun like it was, and that it would be able to be used as a refuge as well for the Paiute who live there and who are the original owners of the land. So it wasn't until about 1968 that we had the same problem again. We've got a drought, we've got overgrazing, and we've got ranchers complaining that they're not being able to support the one-fifth of the beef that we use in this country. The rest of it we have to have imported. So they pay, let's be honest, Clive and Bundy pays $1.35 per cow per month to use BML land. If he wanted to use private land, he'd pay $20 per cow per month. Probably. And even from some of his Patriot friends who live down the street. Okay. Right. So it behooves the ranchers not to use the government, and the government provides subsidies. The government provides insurance. The government even goes out and kills any of the predators in the area, and the taxpayers pay anywhere between $52 to $200 million, not including the loan programs, not including the fees that the cattle ranchers provide to the BLM, only covers 15% of what it costs to take care of that land. So the taxpayers are fronting the rest of that. We pay an exorbitant amount, you and I, to make sure that this land is useful to all of us, and we all own it.
Roger that.
So if what they're doing right now makes absolute no sense, unless you look at this from a private corporate understanding.
Right.
From a rancher's point of view.
That's the impression I got, too, you know, and what's happening is gradually I'm seeing that people are changing towards that point of view, right? Over.
Well, the people in Burns obviously do not want them. They've got signs all over the place saying go home. And getting back to the sheriff, he offered to escort them out with no problem. The rumors about the FBI and these five arrest warrants are simply just rumors. The FBI are waiting it out. They don't want another Waco, and this has been correlated to Waco, even though there's not really a correlation when you look at the details and compare them. But right, because hey, there's that...
technically, out, Suzanne, I hate to disagree with you there. I hate to disagree with you.
Isn't it closer to Ruby Ridge than it is to Waco.
Okay, but it's not true. Okay, the FBI aren't just waiting it out. They're already there, and they have and one of their spokespersons for this whole action is Pete Santilli, who is an informant for the FBI. Okay, and we have the documents to prove this. So, so everybody who's there, hello, you're working for the FBI, whether you know it or not.
Right on.
Now, we have been joined by a new caller. This is so interesting. I want to hear more about it. John has been patiently waiting. What is your question for our guest, John?
Well, you know, I've been paying some attention to this as well. I covered it on my show last Sunday a little bit, but not in depthly because it's very, you know, it's very fresh and very new to all the situations going on, not only around the country, but around the world. One of the things that I've heard is that this place is being surveilled by armed drones, you know, around the idea of maybe Predator drones that are armed with Hellfire missiles, and that they were, it's been said that, well, if this does turn into a hot situation, they'll just blow them off the face of the earth. I mean, this could play out in so many different ways.
They're not going to do that, bro. They're just hyping the fear so that whoever the hell is in there benefiting from all the media attention from this will get even more attention from people who will believe what they're saying. We're under big threat. This is a stand against tyranny. We're going to die. We're going off to war and everything. They're hyping it up emotionally, just like the mainstream media does, to get themselves more hits. It's just that simple.
Well, I'll tell you what was really clear was how much the corporate media was distorting what was available in terms of anybody looking a little bit on the internet for information. Over.
I have a very important response. The way it looks to me, being somebody who followed this from the first Bundy incident, who was a part of this station, so I know how good the relationship was because of my relationship with Nighthawk, my relationship with Jer-Bear. Long story short is, and which is why I brought up Jer-Bear, is Pete Santilli, the man in charge of his own thing, went to there. He went to them. He put a full investment in the story of the Bundys. Revolution Radio, who believes in a volunteer army of their own resources and barely scraping by on its resources, couldn't get a strong enough presence. Jer-Bear was there because he was actually the closest of our regular staff at the station.
My advice to you, Steve, is to steal $50,000 off the trucker's ride for the Constitution. Okay, problem solved.
Look, I get it. My point is that Pete Santilli is investing in anybody who is in that ring. He is taking what Alex Jones does, and he's transforming it into something that's appropriate as a platform for an actual revolution instead of just talking about it. And that's why the Bundys are closer to the Santillis than they are with the Ringleys, to be frank. And that is a cross that this station has to bear, is that we could have had a much more brotherly connection with them. Me and my father donated walkie-talkies to the Bundy cause. Okay, so we put a little bit of an investment in there, and I was told that those walkie-talkies are in Oregon right now. So I have a larger investment, per se.
Well, you know, just like the military industrial complex has a lot of investments as well, bro. It doesn't mean that it's good. And here's the thing. If you invest in somebody who was a known asset of the federal government, right, and the entire reason for this protest is to, you know, stand against the federal government, I think it's kind of counterintuitive. Just a little.
Well, I have another question for Susan. Susan, what did you think about what happened to the people that were there who got hassled for that burn? What do you think about that? Over.
Well, you know, if you're trying to cover up the poaching that you're doing, you do what they did. They underestimated the fire and they burned 137 acres of land that belongs to everyone.
the unfortunate part about this case is mandatory minimums, which we can go all the way back to Ronald Reagan and blame him too. The idea that you have to have a minimum. Now, they did serve time. The son served a year. The father served 3 months. But right. When it went to appeals, they said, and this is just the way the law is written. It's terribly written. I disagree with it completely.
Right.
The father, Dwight, is very old, and I don't think that it's fair to put him in a prison where these are probably the last years of his life.
Well, they're talking about charging him as terrorists, right?
No, well, they charged them under the law that was created during the Clinton administration after the Oklahoma City bombing. And per that, the minimum sentence is 5 years. Oh. Now, should they be treated, should they have been convicted or even brought up on charges under that law? That's debatable. Right. But, you know, if a BLM agent was, you know, napping in the woods or, if you know, they would have been burned to death. So the poaching problem is a serious problem. The cover up of that poaching is a serious problem. And that's something that those ranchers should be held accountable for. But to the extent of putting them away for 5 years, I don't agree with that. But I also don't agree with mandatory minimums.
Right. Well, that whole thing has gotten out of hand. What is it, three times law?
My question is, why are they even there? Why are they even occupying that land? Can anybody explain that to me? Because it doesn't make any sense. Okay, some guys who are alleged poachers who burn some land, therefore we occupy state land with guns.
Because that land is also owned by the Bureau of Land Management, and they are in a cold war with the Bureau of Land Management.
Right.
Because they are trying to fight back the power. They have to rob the Bureau of Land Management of its resources in order to secure their own resources. They're doing it.
So it's let me just see if I can got this. It's Bundy Ranch 2. Right? That's it. Full stop. Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, it's Bundy Ranch too. The other guys they got roped into it because they were looking for protection because they were in the same boat. They were also screwed by effectively the BLM. These are, dude. This is the last stand of some people that have had ground for a very long time that they took good care of when the government was taking care of. Because people want to white guilt everybody about, oh, yeah, but that's the Native American land anyway, and you guys are assholes for bringing it up. The government is the one that's screwing up the land. People like cattle ranchers, all they care about is the land. They want fertile land so they can have fertile crops and fertile livestock so that way they can make a good profit. And
so do you agree with subsidies?
It's all in good balance with nature as long as you're not using GMOs. Yeah. And these guys were trying to be organic free range. The whole argument is free range. The whole argument is the organic argument. It's very important. Our very health relies on this. These people provide us our beef. We love beef in this country. It's a big effing deal.
So are you telling me?
Wait, can I hold on a second, guys?
The BLM around.
Hold on.
Wait, can I respond to that, please?
Please do.
Okay. Ranchers, and this goes back all the way to before the BLM ever existed in the 1890s. This is a private business, and they have consistently overworked land, caused droughts, and ended up going bankrupt. So the idea, the concept that a private corporation is going to use the resources and continue to replenish the resources, history doesn't support that. The fact that we are arguing for the rights of private corporations who only contribute one-fifth of the beef that we consume. The rest of it is imported out of China and other countries. And on top of that one-fifth of beef that they produce, we spend an excess of close to $1 billion in subsidies and taxes in order to keep their businesses going. So this argument is ridiculous. This is an argument for corporatism, for corporations to abuse resources, and so no one can use the land.
Oh, it's like the false split. It's like the false split. Like people are like, okay, no, I support the tyrannical government. No, I support the tyrannical corporations.
Well, you know, okay, it's complicated. That's part of the problem here. A lot of it is news distortion, who's doing the news, what the point of view is. And there's a lot of lumping these individuals in with the whole industry. You got to be careful about that, because we really got to look at them as individuals in this case, because they're the ones being punished of the people in this situation who got punished. I mean, they actually paid the fine. You certainly could have better legislation. For example, why is anybody doing a burn off of that side without having some really good water trucks, usually, available to stop and retard the burn? Now, that's where it gets a little bit in your face.
Maybe right? They didn't want to get busted for organic poaching.
Oh, that too. You know, there's all these hidden human aspects to this drama. And certainly there's lots of people that are milking it for publicity. That's okay. It's what we need, really, sometimes. It's how they do it that really counts, though. Right, Susan?
And with what intention, you know? Like, if the intention is to, you know, get the Patriots to fight first, to shoot first, so that the government has a excuse to crack down on Patriots the whole country over, which is exactly what the federal government has been trying to do since forever, right? Then it's not good news coverage.
You know, I was cruising around the United States and looking at possible detention facilities, other words, FEMA. And I'll tell you, I was amazed at what I found. It's a scary world out there, and there's a lot of people who have been talking about wiping out 90% of humanity as the way to balance all of the corporate horrors that we are currently involved with. Over. You know,
I just thought of a joke here. Like, I was just thinking about how poorly behaved American students are now, and I think instead of just getting punished with detention, they should be punished with indefinite detention at a FEMA camp.
You know,
it would certainly cause some serious things.
What happened to you, Joey? What happened to you? Well, I was skateboarding in the hallway, and then I got an indefinite detention. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, but you know what? That's the thing. We've all seen that movie. It's called The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, you bet.
Let's let John. John was trying to get in there.
Sure. Please
Sorry
do
about
it,
John. That.
You're all right. I was going to say, you know, abolish the IRS. Get rid of all these damn bureaus, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, you know, and all these other government organizations. Get rid of them. They're doing nothing but raising absolute hell, complete toil and chaos with citizenry. I mean, my God, how long are we going to have to say, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it's so damn ridiculous. The federal government is way beyond our control. And, you know, all we're going to sit here and beat each other up back and forth about, you know, what's right, what's wrong. What's right is the American people have a right to their selves. Not all this control, this mechanism of control that we see day in, day out. And now we're saying, you know, all this talk about gun confiscation or, you know, new executive orders. Let's have about another 500,000 executive orders that aren't going to do a damn thing but make everything even tougher for the American citizenry and just that much more profit. For
I have a sorry.
I'm so damn.
You want to know why Americans have gone down this path? Here's why Americans have gone down this path. It's that whole white guilt thing again, right? Because guess what? As long as you can get one representative of every single minority to say that everybody in America should lose this right or this privilege by force, then they will agree to do so because, well, gosh, I don't have an argument for that. My dad was a bastard, and that's how that's going to go down. And that's exactly what we've been seeing. It's the subconscious black card the president plays because most of the president's social advisors, like the ones that go on the news to advocate for any of his social programs, are usually black, Hispanic, or openly homosexual. And they come out and they don't talk about race or whatever, unless that's the subject matter that they've been asked to talk about. But, you know, but it's the whole thing of you can't say that the president's things are like this just because I'm your low hanging fruit. It's bait. It's baiting us into making it a racial thing, which is by design because of all these little official papers that Susan has disclosed for us.
Really great stuff. I went to her site, read on. I like her style. I like her reporting. I like her accuracy. Susan, it's really a delight to have you here. So what do you think? What do you think ultimately, if you could do anything, and we ought to do a round the table on this one. If you could do anything, Susan, anything at all, you know, in terms of changing the reality that we're in now, what would you do? What would you change? I myself would make hypocrisy the only law that we have.
I think we need to be educated. I think that we are running on emotion and we are not thinking logically. I think we're not thinking all the way through. I think we're not thinking about the consequences of certain actions and considering all of the repercussions, whether intended or not, and moving forward based on what's the best possible outcome. We're not doing that. We are running on our emotional state. We are grabbing onto things because we're terrified, and we are allowing that fear to dictate major decisions in our life, you know, not just getting married or what job you choose, but also who we elect for president, who we elect to the governorship. And these decisions then affect everyone. Well, and so what we're doing is running on a fuel of fear that our country is not going to be the way we always thought it would be. It's not 1953 anymore. Get over it. There are progressions that are wonderful. And it is the best time in history, if you look back, and I'm speaking as a woman, and I'm going to say it, it's the best time for me to be alive. I would not want to be alive even 50 years ago, because I would be confined to barefoot and pregnant, and if my husband decided to beat me, there would be nothing that I could do, because if I divorced him, I was a whore.
Yeah,
and we're just talking about 50 years ago.
It's only the last 100 years that women have stopped being possessions, chattel, in the United States. And but what you're doing currently is exactly the possibility that we created by doing what we did. You know, there were a lot of us fighting for your right to do what you're doing right now back in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. We didn't forget that people had human rights, that they were important. We did realize and always have commented about how confused we are. But, you know, with shared consciousness, with shared awareness, comes the possibility of shared consciousness. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, Susan, is what do you think about your interface with the internet?
I think it is absolutely amazing. I remember when none of this existed. And to be honest, I wouldn't have met my husband if it wasn't for the internet. I was in Florida and he was up here in Seattle. And the only reason why we met is because a college friend of mine thought it would be funny if she put my profile on a dating website. And so
right on.
Here I am. I wouldn't be. Yeah, exactly. That's I wouldn't funny. Be able to do what I do if it weren't for the internet. And this is an amazing technology that I do not think we are utilizing because, again, going back to the
not
fear.
Yet.
You know, here's an example of what I'm talking about. You know, if you listen to alternative media for, you know, a couple of decades and you watched the progression of the phone from, you know, the beeper all the way to the smartphone that we have now, you would think that that smartphone is the worst evil thing in the whole world. And yes, the NSA has been spying on us with it. But that tool has brought forth what was considered urban legend, that people are being killed and discriminated against by the police. This device that's so evil that nobody should ever own one has now become a tool for activism, for changing the way that we look at things. Obama took away the rights of the police departments to purchase under the 1033 program that George Bush Sr. put together.
Right.
We are talking about the death of a 12-year-old boy over a toy. And the choking to death of a man over loose cigarettes and the death of a woman because she decided not to put out her cigarette. And we would never have known it. It would always have been something that people talked about and never
urban
really
legend.
Exactly. Until this device. Now, for me, I look at this as a progression toward freedom
and communication. I know a lot of people disagree with me because with every technology, of course, it's all in the hands of the holder, right?
Do you think we could possibly adapt to flash voting, to that kind of electronic identity in our republic, in our social and political culture? Do you think that's possible?
I think that the technology, I know that they're working on that technology to use your smartphone in order to vote. I don't think that the temperament of the country is receptive to it simply because of what we've seen with the Diebold scandal and hacking democracy.
Roger that. Yeah, I was paying attention back in 2000, and we were talking and tracing and following all the hacks of the political system at that time. Serious stuff. And it's not been remedied. We still have really faulty voting, eh?
Now, can I say something? Because we're running out of time, and we were talking before about gun confiscation. Now, I find it funny when the military-industrial complex spokesperson, the president, starts talking about confiscating guns or gun control, and then immediately afterwards, record amounts of guns are bought by Americans off the military-industrial complex. Okay? I'm not finished. Now, the reason why it's so funny to me is because Americans over the last few decades have become so fat, so sick, and so stupid. How much of a threat are they possibly going to be against a tyrannical government when the food, water, and pharmaceutical drugs aren't available at the mall anymore? All right? Doesn't matter how much guns you've got, if you're starving to death and too stupid to resist, you know?
Well, we're vulnerable in a lot of areas.
No. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Kids.
I think it's fear.
Usually everybody puts down teenagers is that they are aware on a different level of everything we are. They're not that blind. They're not stupid either. They're incredibly brilliant. And they're realizing that there's lots of sources for alternatives. And that's what I think we need to do is create possibilities allowing our corporate entities to shut us down. Over.
Let me reiterate. 4% of Americans believe they're below average intelligence. Okay? Thank you.
87% North Americans are at the limits of their credit as far as credit card debt goes.
Yeah. We're talking about a congruence of crisis, all right? All things that could be possibly in the red.
I'm talking about that.
Yeah.
You and me are the only people that have talked about that I know of.
Yeah.
That the fact that we're likely to be caught by not one or not two, but a whole bunch of things at the same time.
Okay, there's this great story that I heard this one time. It's a story in the form of a question, all right? Now, a dude gets shot in the heart. All right, and he runs into a burning building. He starts inhaling lots of smoke, and an air conditioning unit falls on him. What killed him? All right,
walking is what killed him.
Okay, see, this is the thing. Me and Suzanne were talking about this before the show, and we were laughing our asses off, but not in a happy, this is funny way, but in a you have to laugh or you'll cry kind of way.
God invented irony.
Mm. As I said in the beginning of the show, if it's not ironic, then it doesn't have that ring of truth to it. So here you are, greatest country in the world, with on average the dumbest, sickest, and fattest people in the world. All right, now is that great? Now, see, here's the thing. This is the reason why I think people have been so systematically dumbed down by the education system and the media, is because if they were educated, as Suzanne suggested, they would have seen these problems long ago, and they would have stopped themselves down the road in which they were being led. They would have changed themselves. They would have changed the country. They would have saved themselves and saved the nation, but they didn't. And I think the reason for this is the people who were dumbing you down were just a little bit smarter than you when they began, and now they're still just a little bit smarter than you because they've been dumbed down too by the whole process.
Well, you know, it's only been in the last 10 years that any alternatives to this domination have existed, at least in the youngsters' point of view. I mean, they're just getting into their teens, a lot of them, and they've got all this information, if they're at all socially curious, that's out there telling them about the problems that they currently have. We've sold them out in terms of their future. We've sold out probably the next 10,000 generations, if you really think about the fact that we have global nuclear pollution. Over.
Well, we're facing extinction. That's what everybody here today.
We really are. We might have to become electronic. We might have to be little collections of electrical charge on a storage device in order to survive as individuals in the next, 100 years?
Yeah, I don't think so. We are running out of show.
Thank you, Keith.
Suzanne, I want to hear both you and Vinny. I want to hear what you're currently working on, any hot stories or new avenues that you're pursuing right now.
Vinny, you want to go first?
Sure. All right, well, I'm actually at a big crossroads in my life right now. I'm good at talk radio. I love it. I'm just thinking about cutting it back just a little bit, maybe to a few days a week, maybe even one day a week, just to keep the pilot light on. Because I asked my listeners today, I did a poll, what side projects should Vinny Eastwood be working on this year? Documentary? TV show? Stand-up comedy? YouTube video blogs, talk radio, or music, right? I can do all of them, and so far, the majority of people are telling me to make the documentary. The next highest is the TV show. A little bit lower than that is stand-up comedy. And I found that it was ironic that talk radio is, like, second to last in that. Like, people want to see something new. That's what that's telling me, and I'm just still mulling it over as to what to do. So watch this space, I guess, at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and youtube.com/Mr News Guerrilla Media, or just search Vinny Eastwood. Yeah.
I got a proposition for you. Why don't you do one stand-up comedy show, just one. It could be a short one, and film it. Then go.
You mean like I already have? Like if you search Vinny Eastwood stand-up comedy, for example?
Well, right, yes, but I'm just saying you have you are faced with that choice yet again. What I'm saying is you take your material that you joked about there, and then that gets edited into your documentary.
Did anybody suggest male pole dancing and documentaries combined?
Male pole dancing.
Yes, and documentaries.
No, we do need the women to get behind us on this.
Well, you could open it up quite a bit without getting, limited.
Well, if you're not any good at it, you might get the sack.
That's true, but in terms of comedy, it might be worth it.
What kind of a documentary would you do, Vinny? Do you have a subject?
I actually do. The documentary is actually quite various, but it's a way of actually linking in all of these different topics, like the big ones, like global warming, the New World Order, and fluoride, and whole bunches of other stuff. Where is it? That's documentary interviews. Give me a second to find it. Here we are, Vinny Eastwood documentary, and there we go. The key to deception. So international banking and derivatives markets, blind trust, loans created out of nothing, and creating interest and all of that kind of thing. And there's just so much stuff on it, bro. Secret societies, psychopaths, Pearl Harbor, the Reichstag, false flag, terrorism. I had like a whole list of of the things here. Ah, here it is, here it is. So this is a total overview. The documentary title is The Key to Deception. It will focus on how the United States and New Zealand have very similar problems when it comes to conspiracy and scumbaggery, tying in a number of areas of conspiracy research and summarizing each topic up in approximately 6 minutes, and then showing how all these issues are connected. International banking, the TPPA and trade deals, NATO, the world government army, geopolitics, powerful roundtable groups, Agenda 21, climate change, secret societies, toxins, chemicals, and radiation in our environment, corruption and how it works, intelligence agencies, false flag terrorism, psychopaths, the false left-right paradigm, the depopulation agenda, how the media became compromised, and finally, simple common sense solutions, inspiring stories and discoveries demonstrating successful resistance to tyranny and why there is cause for hope.
See, that Bravo. Sounds like a TV show to me.
Good. Bravo.
Do a whole TV series on that. We're hearing the music. Suzanne, tell us what you're working on as we go out.
All right. I am working on my website, OccupyCorporatism.com. My husband and I have two businesses, CrystalPureCBD.com and HealthMaxCBD.com, if you're interested in isolate for a host of things. And I'm focusing on my show, Hardline. It is now going to be on terrestrial radio, FM, hopefully in Oregon. So I'll let you know what station to listen to. And thank you guys very much for this awesome, totally awesome show. Thank you.